You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Talevi, and joining me in studio this evening are David Shapiro from Assessment Securities and Wayne McCurry from F&B Wealth and Investments. If you'd like to send questions to us, please do. You can SMS 41392, you can email stockwatch at bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. David, Wayne, good evening. A real about turn on the markets today. Markets ending down.
And yesterday.
And yesterday. And yesterday. Well, you know, Monday was such a positive start, and then we've given it all back. What unsettled markets today?
Look, I think it was a lot to do with the stronger rand, because the rand hedges came under pressure. The financials were basically square, but the big rand hedges, SAPI came out of the index. I think there was a little bit of selling going on there. But it was Richemont, Naspers.
I mean, Richemont went ex-dividend, so was that one of the reasons why?
I picked up a story.
Yeah, but the divvy's not big there.
Yeah, and I picked up a story, UBS. You don't see this. You don't often see a sell or an analyst come out and sell, particularly on a stock like Richemont. And they came out overnight with a sell. In fact, they looked at all the components, all the luxury components. Only Richemont is here. And I must be honest, I only read the first paragraph, but their concern was around Cartier, which I didn't realize makes up such a big part of their earnings before income and tax. And also, they reckon a lot of that comes from China. So they were negative on Cartier. They weren't negative on the segment, you know, like LVMH, etc.
Remember, they had problems 5 years ago with the Cartier watches in China.
They had to
buy back all the watches in the market because they never sell at a discount. They buy back the watches and destroy them.
And then they destroy them.
Yeah.
So why? I can only comment on what I read, you know, and I'm not an analyst to the point that I can really say that. But, I mean, it did bring them down. And we were ex-div about 300 odd cents. So they lost about 600, half of which was because of the report.
I mean, just a point on Richemont before we talk about the general market is that, has Richemont missed a trick in moving more into the makeup or handbags or shoes,
this
accessories
yeah.
of the luxury?
Yeah.
Because that's an accessible way, even though, I mean, you sort of boggle at the cost of a Jimmy Choo pair of shoes or handbag. It's an entry into the luxury world as opposed to a haute couture dress, which will cost you your family. You know, whereas Richemont is still a specialist in jewelry and watches, which are very high-end purchases. And this maybe was something groups got
it
right.
It still staggers me. When I say staggers me, I find it incredibly interesting. You know, I'm off to New York next week as well. Family again, and that whenever you walk through the big department stores like Saks or Bloomingdale's and so on, you'll see what an impact that those accessories have, which are the Jimmy Choo shoes,
Louboutin,
or all of those things, plus the
Gap.
Bags and accessories.
No,
Gap. And that's taken over the luxury area of the market, and that becomes an experience. So when you go into these shops, this is what you look at, and the amount of marketing that goes into that. So I think you're right. You know, I think that the watch segment, that very high segment, has been relegated down the ladder.
Mm. Well, it's just too expensive.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and you can get a decent Swatch for a fraction of the cost.
I don't want to say it, but Swatch also came down today.
Okay, well, there goes that theory. What about the general market? You've got the Fed coming out with some sort of announcement shortly. You know, Donald Trump's Trump wants 100 basis points cut from the Fed. You're not going to get that. Do you think it's a given, though, that you're going to get 25 basis points?
I think it's going to happen. Look, I mean, the oil story might have scared a little bit, but that's very short term. It's not a longer term issue, this. I mean, it could escalate, you on earth knows, but as it stands now, there's plenty of oil in the world's markets. Despite this supply coming off stream, there's plenty of oil in the world's markets.
And also the price, the higher price actually encourages other producers to come back into the market. So, you know, and that's how the market finds its equilibrium, I guess.
But I think it is. I think the Fed's being pushed into reducing rates, not necessarily by Trump, simply because of the issues that Trump's caused with uncertainty in markets.
They will cut rates because of the danger that's the effect that the trade wars is having on the underlying economy. And of course, there's no inflation there.
No.
There's no inflation.
And I think if I heard a gentleman from UBS, a very highly respected man, saying, you know, if Trump would just stop tweeting,
yes,
you know, uncertainty would be removed. But businesses don't know what's going to come out overnight. So I think the trade wars itself has caused a huge amount of uncertainty, which itself is a negative force in global growth, so on global economy.
What about the South African economy? And the question is, hi, my favorite Stockwatch trio. If South Africa hits the wall with ensuing hyperinflation and devaluing of the rand, will rand hedge stocks still maintain their real value? So if Richemont is a million rand a share, I guess this would be in a hyperinflationary scenario.
Yes.
How is this tradable in a daily accelerating downward scenario, for example?
Well, the dollar or pound price will stay constant, and then it'll just be translated into whatever the rand does.
No.
You would trade in rands.
It's true to that. You can do it every day. If you pick up the price at British American Tobacco or AB InBev is trading overseas, converted at the pound rand rate, you get the local price. We don't make the price. We take that price. So we will take that price.
And I mean, even if it's not quoted overseas, if you are a rand quoted company, but your assets are offshore and your income is offshore, the rand price will equate to that if the rand collapses and we get hyperinflation. Look, that's a bit of a way off, if it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a way off, so I wouldn't sort of start worrying about it right now.
Inflation's reasonably controlled.
I mean,
inflation's good.
The Financial Mail,
so one positive.
Our cover story this week is on Nesesha Kanyako, the Reserve Bank governor, and how not just how they have kind of held the barbarians at the gate, but how they've actually anchored inflation expectations lower.
Yes. Two years ago,
I think.
Because up until 2 years ago, and we spoke about it on the program quite extensively, up until 2 years ago, when the Reserve Bank spoke, they said 3 to 6%.
Yes, now they say 4.5%.
And then they changed it 2 years ago, they said 4.5%. There's no more 3 to 6%, the target is 4.5%.
Because people were just saying, okay, well, we'll go to the upper, 5.9% is okay.
5.9% still in the target range.
Yeah. Okay, so we're very far off hyperinflation for the time being. Right. US stocks, speaking about them, does David still buy cosmetics like Estee Lauder? Presumably not for himself, although there's nothing wrong with male grooming. Is he not concerned about the debt of the company? Does Estee Lauder carry a lot of debt?
I don't think it's excessive debt. No, I think it's manageable. I think the reason we buy them, and they've been under pressure with L'Oreal and quite a few like that, simply because of worries about Chinese demand, or call it Asian demand. But I think going back to the UBS report that we spoke about earlier, they still remain very, very positive about the outlook for Estee Lauder. And the reason is that it produces brands that somehow has captured the management.
I mean, they have brands across the spectrum. Yeah. So if you look at Estee Lauder, it's not just Estee
Lauder.
It's not
that smelly perfume that they used to, that my mom used to wear. You remember that, like, could knock you out from 100 meters. No, that's not Estee Lauder anymore. It's Bobby Brown,
Mac.
And Mac,
Joe Malone, do they own Joe Malone?
It's Joe Malone, yeah. And then Le Maire, which you cannot afford.
No, but these are also, going back to the beginning of our conversation, these are affordable luxury.
Yeah.
Aspirational and affordable.
The more luxury becomes affordable, the less luxury it is.
Yeah. Well, then they have this range across the spectrum.
No, I hear you, but I mean, it's like when Porsche and Ferrari brought out a cheap motor car, it actually damaged the brand. They stopped that very quickly. You know, so you've got to manage the brand.
Remember Pierre Cardin did that, where you could go into the OK Bazaars and buy Pierre Cardin socks or something like that, you know.
And that was the end of it.
That was the end, you know. But I think Estee Lauder, it's aspirational. That's how you describe it. It's aspirational brands.
I mean, I remember one of the big fashion houses, one of the big Swedish fashion houses, used to bring out literally a peak cap, and it was cheap. And lots of people bought it because it had the branding on it. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, they just upped the price tenfold because the people who were buying it, they didn't want them to be seen on
their heads. Well, it was the curse of the Burberry, the Burberry branding. And, you know, they went through this fascinating chav moment a few years ago.
It's still a big area. I think the point coming across is luxury is still very, very vibrant area. But you've got to know where to place it, which luxury.
So you're not worried about the debt?
No.
And then there's a question saying, we all know now that Wayne likes Spur burgers.
Ooh, definitely.
So is this a stock, a buy, given that its balance sheet is not too shabby in our current economic environment?
It does well, but this is a highly competitive environment. It does well, but this is a truly highly competitive environment.
They pulled off a pretty good turnaround in the results that they produced last week.
Yeah, good brands.
Yeah. No, they've got good brands. It works well, but I don't think it's the worst share you can buy. It's just a very competitive environment.
They're clever. If you go to Rocamamas now, they converted certain Rocamamas to halal. You know, clever moves like that. So suddenly it
and
becomes...
And then they opened up the Mexican taco one and that. But cannot mention Spur without saying, why did they take garlic snails off the menu?
I know,
still haven't forgiven them for that.
I mean, really, even David and I are upset on your behalf.
You know, when they walk past with those garlic snails, I think three quarters of the restaurant just falls over dead.
Well, Wayne liked them.
It was the best.
So if Pierre Fontoine is watching, please, could you possibly reinstate them just for Wayne? Then there's a question on... a question on three safe corporate bonds issued by local listed companies and yields that individual private investors are able to purchase.
It's not a market item.
You know what? It's not a listed market. It's not a kind of market that we can get into. And what's interesting, even offshore, you can't really get into a corporate bond market. They're only sold in chunks of $100,000 or something like that. And you find that in most of the debt markets, it's very difficult to actually, as a private individual, unless you're going to buy a fund.
But you can buy a fund. I was just about to say that you can buy a fund.
Future Growth.
Yes. There are quite a few corporate bond funds. I mean, the domestic medium-term note market is actually big in South Africa. Mm. It's a big market, but it is corporate. You know, the individual can't go in and buy one for themselves. Mm. So you've got to get a fund that's got it.
I mean, what is the rationale for investing in a corporate bond as opposed to buying an equity?
Corporates will pay. Corporates pay 1, 1.5, 2, maybe even 3% more than your deposit rate. So it's got a higher yield. Mm. But then, of course, you take credit risk.
But if you know the corporate, and you know the corporate solid, you look at the balance sheet and the debt is well covered.
It's probably easier to buy a fund.
I mean, would you rather buy into a bond fund that had exposure to corporates than equities? Because also the bond investors tend to be favoured in the event of a default or some calamity.
I mean, you haven't got the upside that equities got. That's
but I think a lot of
it's part of your portfolio.
Yeah. A lot of the bond funds, you know, even some of the short-term money market funds, all got a lot of corporate debt. If you go through what they own a lot of corporate debt. So that's the best. That's the best. That gives them that extra yield above the money market or above call rates or short-term rates. Yeah.
Can we just talk about call rates and short-term rates and repo rates in the context of what has happened with the Federal Reserve?
You're going to do this, hey?
Well, I don't understand it. What does it mean? You know, you've had the FT running about stories where you had, 85
billion dollars
was required from the overnight, the Fed, the repo rate in the US, and they're talking about this liquidity crunch. Does it have
a
greater
meaning?
At a time
where they're discussing lowering interest rates in the US,
and it actually
pushed
the Fed funds rate up.
Yeah.
So what is the significance of this, or is this just a weird one-off in a strange week for markets?
I think watching very carefully whether it is a one-off, or if it's a two-off or three-off, that can be handled. But obviously, there's a huge demand for money, short-term money.
Cash.
No one's quite sure where it's coming from. And what the Fed does, like any other central bank,
is they supply the liquidity.
They supply liquidity on a short-term basis. And obviously, if there's a sudden rush for demand, the rate will go up.
They've got to create money and it's great to go. I mean, you've also got the Reserve Bank window. They also square the books every single night.
Mm. But it's quite a weird conundrum to face 85, in the week that you're expected to cut
interest. I mean, 85 billion in the bigger scheme of the money market is absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it is minuscule. It's proper, it's pin money.
So what happens is a bank is caught short on money. A bank hasn't got the liquidity.
And they've got to go call it.
And they go to the Fed to say, hold on. And they look around the market first.
They try and scratch
to scry, you know, from other banks. And when they can't find it, the lender of last resort is the Fed.
And then they can get to charge
a
little bit
extra.
Yeah, but
it might just be an aberration.
Okay.
But if it's not, it's going to throw Powell off and it's going to throw Trump off.
Yeah, well, we'll leave it there for the moment. If you'd like to send questions, please do. You can SMS us 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to U.S. markets ahead of that U.S. Federal Reserve decision this evening. The S&P down 1/3%, the Nasdaq off 2/3%, just about, and the Dow Jones trading about 0.25% weaker. Across the Atlantic, you've had the FTSE 100 giving up a little bit today, about 0.1%, the CAC gaining a little bit, and the DAX also just over 0.1% higher. So I guess everyone's trading, or marking time rather, ahead of Jay Powell's decision this evening. Still with me in studio are David Shapiro from Sassman Securities and Wayne Curry from F&B Wealth and Investments. Is that natural to see markets do very little ahead of this?
They're holding up. You know, you don't realize that the S&P at 2995 is about a 1% off its all-time high. So there hasn't been any major sell-off, and nor can you feel that there's any pressure to sell down shares in any big way. So we're in just no man's land.
But there's no real catalyst to buy either.
I think it's the worst kind of market.
I think that's important. The only catalyst to keep the market up or push it higher is in fact lower interest rates. Because the economy is okay, but it's not leaping forward. In fact, it's slowing down a little bit. And the outlook doesn't look bad, but the outlook is for a global growth slowdown. So there's no catalyst. You know, at least no matter what you might think about South Africa, is that if our economy does turn around, the shares are pricing in a continuation of the current status quo. So lots of South African shares, I mean, that's if we do get a turnaround, are actually very cheap. So there could be a catalyst. I mean, our economy could still go up, could go down, but it could still go up from these levels. Whereas the US and the world, what's the catalyst? I mean, look at Europe. The central bankers there are standing on their head to try and get it to grow, and nothing's happening.
Well, I mean, you know, just a family issue. We were talking about this, trying to get a loan to buy a house in Italy is a torturous exercise, and you've got collateral and security and blah, blah, blah. But banks don't want to lend, and yet they're sitting on these negative rates. They don't have to pay for their cash. And so there's just a jamming in the system.
No one can understand that. No one can understand why businesses or people don't want to go out and borrow money.
Well, they probably do want to go out and borrow, but the banks don't want to lend. I mean, maybe this is weird hold.
Maybe that's where the blockage is.
Now, that's a problem when you're in negative bond rates, which implies deflationary environment. You give a bond against a house or a property, and deflation does take hold, that value goes down. Your bond value does not go down. Banks will sit and say, well, but we don't know.
But the issue is that why isn't there the confidence to actually go out and borrow and set up a factory or do things? Simply because people haven't got the confidence down the line. So they're not borrowing. There's no business investment. Manufacturing's down. The only positive side, I think, of the global economy at the moment is the US consumer just seems to be spending. But, you know, you can't go on forever without manufacturing or investment or those sides of the economy picking up. So,
and even the US spending,
just nowhere.
They're not going crazy.
No.
It's judicious spending, if you can call it
that.
Yes,
they're spending, but
but just not enough.
Not enough.
Coming back home, Blue Label. Have the Levy brothers done such a bad deal on Celsi that it destroys Blue, or are they about to pull off a sale of Celsi, in which case Blue is very cheap?
I don't know.
You know what? The market's saying things are bad.
And they delayed their financials.
I think next week the financials
they have to come out with the results.
We haven't heard
any
news.
I think it's the week after, but it could be. It doesn't matter. Yeah. But put up a long-term chart there.
It's the 26th of September that they have to come out with results, as
but
far as I'm aware.
But there's no news on the deal. There's no further news on the deal. And that's a worry.
And I mean, I know Jonathan Bear. I met him donkeys years ago. I wouldn't put money into Celsi. I just wouldn't.
But the thing is, I suppose the conundrum for an investor in Blue or a potential investor in Blue is, does what is reflected in the share price, is this all Celsi?
When you're rolling down like that, you can't come to a sudden stop.
This is all
Celsi. It's only when you hit the bottom.
But you have other operations in Blue. I mean, Blue isn't even...
You don't even hear about...
100% shareholder of Celsi.
You don't even hear about the other operations.
So this is totally overshadowed everything else.
You just hear Celsi.
And first of all, market cap of Blue is $2.5 billion.
Anyone who can work out those two SPVs and how they work and how they bought CellC is a far more intelligent person than what I am. I've heard it explained to me by the brothers twice now, I think. Still don't understand it. And you cannot read the financials and try and understand it. It is impossible.
These were two little smart jockeys on a bad horse, you know. Do you know what I mean? That's
you know.
And the jury was out from the get go.
The thing was, CellC was failing when they bought into it. It was already failing. Did already the partners, the previous partners, that just put more and more and more money into it, and more money and more money. But we must take a lesson from all of this. And I know it's one of my little pet subjects. Why do you want to enter an already saturated market? And these are all the new banks coming in. Why do you want to enter a saturated market? And the same with CellC and Telkom. Why do you want to enter a saturated market? Mm. The only thing you can compete with is price, and that's a race to the bottom. That's not a competitive edge, it's a race to the bottom.
Yeah, well, it's that's a competitive right. edge that for the customer, the but it's for you.
For the company, it's not.
It is. Those kind of companies are disasters. Just avoid them. You know, I don't know where they're going, and it's a sad situation because they had such a good business going. And sometimes it's arrogance. You know, you always think I can beat the market or I'm better than the market. And it's not the first time this has happened. This is just, there are a number. You know, the whole JSE is peppered with similar kind of stories.
Look, the CellC guys said they're going to make money three ways. They pay a fixed fee to do the roaming so they can undercut other people who come in and give the same service. They said these virtual network operators like FNB will naturally come to them because they can do, in fact, a better job than other people. And they've got when the next G comes out, is that 5G? What's
5G,
coming?
I think.
When 5G comes out, there's got to be pooled resources. Even the big companies can't afford. Maybe Vodacom can, but I don't even think MTN can afford the capex to roll it out. That there'd have to be a consortium to roll this out, so they don't need the capex to go to the next G. So that's their business plan.
But that's all very well until you're hobbled with debt and you can't pay your creditors.
You're not going to get 5G for nothing. You know, in other words, you're going to have to charge the people who use it money, and that's a problem. Well, no. Someone's paying for the capex, and you don't get the capex for free.
I was listening to the radio driving here. Japan's got 8G. For the Rugby World Cup. So if you're watching in Japan, you can watch it in 8G.
And it probably costs half of a
3G.
Oh, well.
8G you can smell as well. That's it. You can smell the armpits.
Thanks. I think I'd rather stick with 3G in that case. How does one choose between NASPAS and the new guy process?
New
guy.
The new guy.
They're all the same.
New guy on the block.
They're all 98.9% the same company. There will be arbitrage between those two prices. So if Prosus goes up, NASPAS owns 74% of Prosus, NASPAS will go up. And if it doesn't go up, guys will sell Prosus and buy NASPAS. So any price differential between the two will ultimately be orbed out.
I mean, I spoke to Basil Zgourdos from NASPAS, the CFO, and asked him that question, would you buy Prosus or NASPAS? He said, well, he elected for Prosus, he had NASPAS shares, but he said, if the discount is wider in South Africa, but you've still got the same assets, then you would buy NASPAS. Prosus has a little bit more value, and maybe, he says, if you believe management is going to do the job by unlocking the discount, then you would buy NASPAS, which trades at a bigger discount to its asset value.
It never works that way. If you've gone to PSG, if you've gone to Remgro, if you've gone to all those companies, you'll find when the discount's there, it's always there. It shifts slightly. Yeah, it shifts 1 or 2 degrees either way, but it never closes.
But NASPAS has got the ability to close that discount maybe more than the companies David's talking about. David's companies, they owned long-established companies that weren't in the hockey stick curve or the J curve, whereas NASPAS is actually are. Whether they succeed or not, time will tell. But there is the ability, if they work, to unlock serious value from that, and then that, by definition, will close the discount. But that's still... at some stage
in the meantime, we got a discount clap on the head. over the last couple of days. I got, you know, yeah, look at the price.
I mean,
Prosus,
today,
which was came on at 1,200, is 1,000.
Yeah, so
below.
Today both of them came off over 3%.
But they should, go up and go down together.
Mm. Okay, so initially, LastPass went down a little bit more than Prosus.
Initially, that price differential was wrong, as we discussed last week. That things were incorrectly priced. Now they are more correctly priced. Mm.
But someone's been giving us a right clap. And big volume. This is 30% of the JSE over the last few days, the two together. But someone's unwinding some very, very big positions and selling off the art. Mm.
Okay, getting to stock picks this evening. Come on. There's a universe of shares to buy. Which ones would you be?
You know, I'm holding what we've got. I haven't done anything. I look every day and I look for something that looks very attractive. You know, I'm still attracted to the US market, but we need to get through a few obstacles first. It's not quite the right time yet, you know, to go into the market. You can sense it from the movements that we're seeing. You know, there are a few waves. So something's got to spark the interest. Mm. But I still go with all the, you know, companies that I have been talking about before.
Mm. Look, I'm maybe going to go for the normal. Go for a basket of SA shares. I mean, certainly the banks have recovered from the fall we saw a couple of months ago. They've come up nicely. Even today with the market down, SA shares actually went up a little bit. And, you know, I'm still optimistic that the future will be better than the past. I'm not saying the future's great. I'm just saying it's better than the past. And if that is the case, as we discussed earlier on, you know, you can buy Standard Bank, First Rand, Nedbank, APSA. You can go buy ShopRite, Spar. Maybe even buy a bit of Woolies. Mm. You know, there are shares out there that show some.
And that's the banks index, which has as you say, a really good recovery from its lows of August. And just lastly, on the Rand being at sort of 1460, do you think this is maybe a short-term high for us? Well, a strength.
Yeah. Look, our fair value for the Rand is still lower than that, about 14, somewhere around there. I mean, fair value is just a target. Doesn't mean it's going to go there.
No. I see the dollar still staying strong. You know, it's U.S. economy still growing. They're still providing higher yields than the rest of the world.
And they're not going to cut interest rates by 100 basis points this evening. Mm. Well, we leave it there. David Wayne, thanks very much for joining us. As always, David Shapiro is from Sassman Securities. Wayne McCurry is from F&B Wealth and Investments. We'll be back with more of your stock-related questions tomorrow night. Have a good evening. Okay, getting to stock picks this evening. Come on. There's a universe of shares to buy. Which ones would you be?
You know, I'm holding what we've got. I haven't done anything. I look every day and I look for something that looks very attractive. You know, I'm still attracted to the US market, but we need to get through a few obstacles first. It's not quite the right time yet, you know, to go into the market. You can sense it from the movements that we're seeing. You know, there are a few waves. So something's got to spark the interest. Mm. But I still go with all the, you know, companies that I have been talking about before.
Mm. Look, I'm maybe going to go for the normal. Go for a basket of SA shares. I mean, certainly the banks have recovered from the fall we saw a couple of months ago. They've come up nicely. Even today with the market down, SA shares actually went up a little bit. And, you know, I'm still optimistic that the future will be better than the past. I'm not saying the future's great. I'm just saying it's better than the past. And if that is the case, as we discussed earlier on, you know, you can buy Standard Bank, First Rand, Nedbank, APSA. You can go buy ShopRite, Spar. Maybe even buy a bit of Woolies. Mm. You know, there are shares out there that show some.
And that's the banks index, as you say, a really good recovery from its lows of August. And just lastly, on the Rand being at sort of 1460, do you think this is maybe a short-term high for us? Well, a strength.
Look, our fair value for the Rand is still lower than that, about 14, somewhere around there. I mean, fair value is just a target. Doesn't mean it's going to go there.
No. Mm. I see the dollar still staying strong. You know, it's U.S. economy is still growing. They're still providing higher yields than the rest of the world.
And they're not going to cut interest rates by 100 basis points this evening. Mm. Well, we leave it there. David Wayne, thanks very much for joining us. As always, David Shapiro is from Sassman Securities. Wayne McCurry is from F&B Wealth and Investments. We'll be back with more of your stock-related questions tomorrow night. Have a good evening.